From the Independent Producer Project and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. In 2013, Aurora Almendral was a brand new foreign correspondent arriving in the Philippines, but she was immediately put to work.
There was a siege in the southern part of the Philippines. Muslim rebels sort of sieged the city for a month. Then there was an earthquake the next month. And then the month after that, Typhoon Haiyan hit.
It was the strongest typhoon to make landfall in recorded history. But it was also in a part of the Philippines that was used to being hit by major storms.
But this one was so strong that it took down all of the communication lines to Leyte and Samar, which were the two island provinces that were the most hard hit. Several hours after the typhoon had already hit Manila, we had no idea how bad it was. Once the first bits of news from local reporters started rolling in, it was incredible how devastated the area really was.
4 million people were displaced and over 7,000 people killed.
It was shocking, and it doesn't matter where you are. There's no way you can be prepared for, you know, walking by hundreds of bodies a day or like seeing an entire city reduced to debris. There's just no preparation for that. And I'd covered Hurricane Sandy. This was well beyond the range of my imagination before I saw it.
On this episode of Unfictional, Aurora Almendral goes back to find out what happened to some of the survivors of the typhoon, how their lives were twisted and disrupted even after the storm had come and gone. We've partnered with the Ground Truth podcast to tell the story of Filipino women and girls forced to sell themselves to fix what the storm had broken, pulled into the sex trade, sending money home to help rebuild their families' lives.
If you went with a guy for one night, what can you do with that money?
Plywood. Kahit kunting hollow blocks.
Plywood, a few hollow blocks. Maybe if you can get three of those nights, you can fix up a house.
And this episode contains some very mature subject matter and frank discussion of sex work, so it's not for children. From KCRW.com, this is Unfictional.
The international name for the storm was Typhoon Haiyan. But in the Philippines, everyone knows it as Yolanda. There was no real way to be prepared for the destruction. The first time I saw Tacloban was 4 days after Yolanda. We drove into the city in the back of an ambulance full of people who were coming to bring antibiotics, water, and food, and to search for the people they loved among the debris. Some of them would go on to reunite with their mothers and brothers and babies. Others would find only corpses. Some would find no trace at all and spend years holding on to the distant hope that one day their child would walk through the door and tell them about the miracle that saved their life. As we wound closer to the center of where Yolanda hit hardest, the broken coconut trees gave way to roofless buildings, and eventually, no buildings at all. Just shattered wood and crushed cement, as far as we could see. As I walked through the rubble, survivors crowded around me.
My husband is missing.
Hindi ko pa nahanap. Ano lang, lima sila namatay.
7 of us died, and my mother too, she says. Even my siblings, 5 of them died. We haven't found them, not a single one.
Doon maraming patay, tapos dito merong iba na matay, pero hindi naman nakasurvive. Salamat sa pamilya ko at walang may nabawasan.
A woman wept, thanking God that everyone in her family survived, but begging me to tell the world that what they needed now was food and water. This was one of my first reporting experiences. I'd never seen destruction like this before. I'd never seen the kind of grief and desperation that followed. The survivors I spoke to were heroic in their ability to move forward, to keep going in the face of unimaginable hardship and pain. Still, I wondered what kind of life could be built out of that destruction. In In the Philippines, a nation of 7,000 islands, there's no debate about whether or not climate change exists. At most, people expect science to confirm what they already know to be true.
I am Rodel Lasco, and I'm one of the scientists involved in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC.
At this point, there's no way to attribute one specific event, like Typhoon Haiyan, to climate change.
But what we can say is that the Typhoon Haiyan is consistent with the projections that storms will be more and more intense. So even without climate change, we're already battered by typhoons. So what climate change will do is it will make it worse for us. Because if there will be more and more of these high-intensity events or very strong typhoons, then that means we will be at harm's way more and more.
One of the things that stuck with me when I was in Tacloban was something one of the United Nations relief workers mentioned. She said after a storm like Yolanda, first comes the humanitarian aid, then come the human traffickers. At the time, it felt too awful to contemplate that in the middle of all this destruction, traffickers would think to do more harm to the survivors. Darlene Pajarito heads up the anti-trafficking agency in the Philippines. She said when she turned on the television and saw the news of Typhoon Haiyan,
actually the first thing that I thought of was really this is going to be a feast for the human traffickers. They will have a pool of so many vulnerable people to prey on. This is a feast for them. And they will definitely take advantage of those people there. And they did.
It's impossible to know exactly how many people are trafficked after natural disasters. But international organizations and governments agree that the factors fueling human trafficking around the world, like poverty and lack of opportunity, are exacerbated by storms like Yolanda. 600 miles and several islands north of Tacloban is the city of Angeles. At its center is a place called Fields Avenue. Hordes of men on vacation amble up and down, leering at the women who are calling to them from the doorways. Men come to Angeles as sex tourists. This used to be a U.S. military base, and there are still a lot of Americans, soldiers and old vets, and guys who like that the girls here speak English. There are Korean businessmen, British and German retirees looking to start over with a young wife, groups of men on holiday gearing up for a weekend of hedonism. Here in Angeles, the women are displayed. Inside, they're crowded onto a stage, thigh to thigh. I'm here because this is where girls from Samar and Leyte, the islands that saw the worst of Yolanda, end up. Sex trafficking in the Philippines is more subtle than it sounds. Most of the time, it isn't a door sliding open on a windowless white van, snatching up a girl off the side of the road, then keeping her under lock and key, forced to perform sex acts for predatory men. This happens, yeah. But most of the time, it's a more subtle coercion. The girl herself, the one who's trafficked, may not know she's talking to a trafficker. Or if she knows, she may not care. Because what's really at play here, what's led to an estimated 400,000 people trafficked in the Philippines today, is the interplay of desperation and hope. It makes people get on a ship or a bus or a van, believing they're bound for something better. Samar and Leyte are some of the poorest parts of the Philippines. They've been vulnerable to trafficking for a long time. Every year, at least one major typhoon pummels their coastlines. For the women, survival and hope lies in a place where they can earn money. A place like Angeles. Over and over, people tell me that there are many girls here from Samar and Leyte. And the streets were filled with them after Yolanda. Inside a strip club, I talk to a girl who calls herself Rose. She says she's 18, like most of the girls here do. She's from Samar and struggled through the aftermath of Yolanda. But after Typhoon Ruby hit a year later and uprooted their rice fields again, her family could no longer manage. Rose went to Angeles believing she would work at a bakery. She's a bar girl now, meaning she's on display at a strip club, and men can buy her for the night. I ask her if she would have come here if Yolanda and Ruby hadn't hit. She looks down at her hands. "Surely not," she whispers. Lovely is another bar girl from Tacloban. She tells me, if a storm like Yolanda comes again, I hope God takes everything, including me, with it. I will just try again in the next life. I would rather die than have to survive a storm over and over again. Then she tells me to leave. She doesn't want to get in trouble. I meet Jojo at 4 a.m. outside the club where she works. She's drunk and rowdy. For each shot she takes with a customer, Jojo earns 100 pesos, around $2. Jojo is 26 years old. She weighs less than 100 pounds. Her hair is long, bleached, and dyed with patches of bright pink. Jojo agrees to show me where she lives. So we squeeze into the sidecar of a motorcycle pedicab. Then we walk the dirt path to her house. It's only 15 minutes away, but instead of dance music, it's crickets, the night breeze blowing through the banana trees, an occasional crowing rooster or barking dog.
Dito na kami sa bahay namin.
Her house is spare. Two simple rooms, barely any furniture, exposed cinder block walls with crumbling cement mortar. Jojo's voice drops to a whisper.
Ito, asawa ko yan. Hap-hap yan eh. Ito, mga anak ko.
This is my husband. He's half American. These are my children. And I'm sorry for the mess.
Her son and daughter and two-month-old infant are sleeping with their father on a single dingy mattress.
Baby, may bisita tayo. Ito ang Yolanda, baby ko. Yan.
Baby, wake up. We have guests. This one is my Yolanda baby.
She points to her son, who's just over 2 years old.
Ito, siya yung Yolanda baby mo.
Hmm.
The next day, we go back to Jojo's house. A variety show is playing on TV, and she and her husband Norman are trying to wrangle their kids to eat, take baths, say thank you when they're supposed to. Norman is doing a lot of the work, making sure the kids have cups of water and food on their plates. Jojo spent the morning vomiting into a bucket. She had a good night, so she'll have 800 pesos, or about $16, waiting for her at the bar.
Habang nandito ako sa tiyahin ko, papadala ko ng pera, kasi wala pa naman akong anak na, dalaga pa.
Of course, that's money. You need to fight for it with your stomach. I can handle it no matter what. But the hangover? Yeah, there's no avoiding that.
Jojo tells me she first came to Angeles when she was 17, 5 years before Yolanda hit. She'd finished her first year in college studying computer science, but it didn't really go well. An older woman she'd met said she knew of a restaurant that needed a waitress. It turned out to be a strip club. Her first day was a shock.
Sobrang kaba ko, tas umiiyak ako.
I was so scared. I was crying. My tears were falling. Sweat was dripping. Because I missed my family for the first time I came to work here. And the first job I got was difficult. I didn't really understand what the job was.
Even now, years after she started working in the bars of Angeles, Jojo still has a hard time saying it. That this is sex work.
Masama ka sa mga foreigners, ganun. Noong time na yun, kasi syempre virgin pa ako, hindi ko pa alam.
It's the kind of job where you go with foreigners. At that time, I was still a virgin. I didn't know yet, and then I was just having drinks, and it was difficult, of course.
In Angeles, a girl's virginity can go for more than $1,000. It might be the most they can ever expect to earn in one night.
Oh no, I didn't sell it.
Kasi rape yun eh. Kasi ano eh.
I didn't because it was rape, because I did not understand the job, so I went out with a foreigner. The foreigner didn't know I was a cherry girl, a virgin. I got drunk while we were bar hopping. I was raped that night. I could not tell the auntie, the owner of the bar, because I was really scared. I didn't know what the foreigner would do. I just didn't know. I knew nothing back then. I did not get any money for it. What a waste, right? When I remember that time, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about myself. Because I really experienced being chased by cops, things like that. It wasn't a decent job, but I just kept on going further. I got used to it.
Jojo spent 6 more years in Angeles. After she was raped, she felt like that's all she was good for. She's not qualified for any other job, she says. So she stayed. She earned money and bought some land in Leyte, where her parents live now. She met her husband, Norman, and with him she had a daughter, then a son. A week after he was born, she moved back to Leyte. She wanted to start over and leave sex work behind. She wanted her children to grow up in the countryside, surrounded by family. But a week after she moved there, Typhoon Yolanda hit.
Sinaptic kasi kami. Ano pa lang? Pagpatak pa lang ang sinabi ng may bagyo.
At that time, we went to safety. At the first drops of rain, right away I took my children, my family, everyone to the evacuation center. And then we heard the howl of the wind. The wind was so strong.
Kasi talagang kakaubusan, dadaan na mo pa, puro patay.
The next day, when you walked around, the dead were everywhere.
Siyempre, sira ah. Wala ka nang makikita sigurong buo. Kaya kahit puno, talsik.
Everything was destroyed. Nothing was left. Even the trees were uprooted.
Oo, oh, sobrang hirap. Kasi, ano eh, parang ito.
There was nothing to eat, no milk for the children, no water. If we needed to go somewhere, there was no gas. It was real hardship.
Talagang dito talaga takbo nila. Yung mga nakapag-umpisa na dito sa bar. Kahit hindi pa.
This is really the place women run to. The ones who end up starting at the bars. Even if they've never done it before, this is where they end up. Because the money's easy here, right? Just one night, if you go with a foreigner, there you go, you've got money. So they end up here.
I ask her, if you were to go with a foreigner, what would you be able to do with the money? What is it enough for?
There's enough to eat there. You'll be able to send money the next morning. You want 1,000 pesos.
It's about $20, but with it, her family can buy
plywood. Kahit kunting hollow blocks.
Plywood, a few hollow blocks. Little by little, you can buy things. Because things are quite cheap there. Maybe if you can get 3 of those nights, it's okay. You can fix up a house.
Kaya iba dito nagtatagal para maayos talaga yung buong bahay.
Some of the women here ended up staying a long time, so they can get their whole house fixed. And if the storm hits their cousin and the whole roof gets taken out, then they're sending money to their other family too.
So pa-konti-konti yung
ano? Kasi hindi naman bihira lang. Bihira lang yung customer ngayon.
But just a little at a time, since business is slow these days. It isn't every day that you can leave the bar with a foreigner.
The money Jojo sent back rebuilt their house and helped put her siblings through school. But when Typhoon Ruby hit in December 2014, again damaging the family's house in Leyte and destroying their crops, it pushed her sister Gemma to join her in Angeles. They now work in the same strip club.
Hindi, tsaka ayoko siyang matulad sa akin, diba? So kung may makita naman ako sa pinagputahan ko.
No, I did not want her to turn out like me. I wanted something else to come out of my whoring.
I want to find out where Jojo and Gemma came from, so I get on a plane to Tacloban with photographer Hannah Reyes Morales. From there, we drive another 3 hours to find their mother and father in a village in Leyte. The narrow roads to their house are lined with lush tropical trees and wide rice fields. Water buffalo wallow in the mud.
Hello! Ikaw ba anak ni Gemma?
Her mother, Erlinda, takes us into their home.
Sige, pasok ko kayo.
She sits us down on a homemade bamboo bench.
Ito na. Lahat na pera niya na binibigay dito na napunta, tapos doon sa palayan namin.
This is it, Erlinda says. All the money Jojo gave us went to this house and to our rice fields. The thin plywood walls, the tin roof, the land the house sits on, were all paid for by Jojo.
Hey, yung napundar niya, naadaan din nadaanan din ng bagyo.
Everything she invested in was hit by Yolanda, Erlinda says. That's it. I think this is all we'll be able to manage in life, she says. Hardship. It wasn't just the house. Jojo had bought rice fields that her parents planned to work. But the fields were torn up by Yolanda, filled with sand and salt water. The motorcycles Jojo bought to rent out were destroyed. The tiny grocery store her mother ran was looted by neighbors out of hunger. It took Jojo 6 years in Angeles, prostituting herself, doing things she never thought she'd do, to build that life for her parents and for herself to escape to. And the storms took it away. Hannah and I asked to see photos of her daughters. Erlinda keeps them buried with some papers in a canvas case in the closet. She takes out a photo of Jojo smiling in an oversized navy skirt and a boxy polo. It's her middle school uniform. Her father, who today is wearing a loose tank top and basketball shorts, was in a pair of slacks and a collared shirt, his arm around Jojo, proud that his eldest child was graduating. Jojo was an honor student, Erlinda tells me.
Yan lang ang picture niya.
Si Jojo din lang.
Ito naman si itong bunso. Bunso ba to? Ay hindi, yung isa. Yung isa yung high school.
She pulls out portraits of her daughters in their high school graduation caps. They smile at the camera. Jojo's photo is torn and peeling at the corners, pockmarked with yellow splotches, damaged by water.
Sweet ni Gemma nung ano nung picture na yun.
I tell Erlinda that Gemma looks sweet in her photo.
High school siya nun.
Yeah, she says. That was when she was back in high school. She loved to dance. They were all part of the church choir, Erlinda says, back when they were small. I had no idea they were going to end up in that place, she says, because my children were so godly.
Hindi ko kalain na.
I had no idea their lives would turn out this way, she says.
Sinoon malilit sila, ginapang ko sila para makapag-aral na maayos. Bigla lang nagganon. Ganon lang siguro.
When they were young, I worked so hard so they could study well, she says. And suddenly, this happened. This is how life goes, I guess. She apologizes for crying.
Sorry.
Jojo and Gemma's story is about making choices as the world changes and circumstances narrow. I realize that Erlinda keeps their childhood photos hidden because she doesn't want to be reminded of a life that's no longer possible. But by the time I leave, I realize something else. In this world, her daughters are not prostitutes. They're breadwinners. Back in Angeles, Jojo and Gemma are putting on makeup together before work. Gemma is sitting on the kitchen counter playing pop songs from her cell phone. Jojo leans on the counter, sifting through their bag of eyeshadows and lip glosses. Gemma and Jojo joke around and laugh. Jojo teases Gemma for flirting with a boy the other night. He looked like Will Smith, she said, and they all giggle. Jojo laces up her Converse Chucks. She's in a pink blouse and jeans, and Gemma is in a t-shirt that says, "No boys allowed."
Parang magpapakasaya ako pero kasama na doon yung pagtatrabaho.
It might look like I'm having fun, Gemma says. But it's part of my job. The sun is just starting to set when they leave the house.
Bye. Yan.
They walk through the dirt roads of their slum and back to the red light district for another night of work. I asked Jojo if she ever dreams of another life, maybe going back to Leyte one day.
Wala na yata akong pangarap. Wala. Hindi na ako nangarap.
I don't think I have dreams. No. I don't dream anymore.
That night, Hannah and I go to the club where they work. Jojo has replaced her jeans with a pair of skin-toned stockings. She's pulled down the hem of what I thought was her blouse and turned it into a mini dress. She's barefoot now, but a pair of platform stilettos are leaning against a nearby bar stool for when the customers come in. A guy from Texas has bought Gemma for the night. She'll earn about $30 from him, much more than at the bar. On the round stage, under bright lights, 20 girls dance half-heartedly to a revved-up pop song. They're squeezed into tiny, two-piece lace uniforms that will take them several nights of work to pay off. They look cold and a bit lost. They must be new here.
That story was produced by Aurora Almendral, with Rachel Rohr, Nathan Toby, Bob Carlson, and Marissa Miley. Sound design by Robert Anderson. Voiceover by Penelope Mendoza. This piece was a co-production between Unfictional and the Ground Truth podcast, which you can find and subscribe to on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. Please podcast the show on iTunes, follow the show on Twitter, @Unfictional, or like us on Facebook, if you could. I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional on KCRW.com.